today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
I've said it before, giving you a double banger here on the Talking Rock podcast, but this is literally the definition of that with two drummers. Up first is Neil Sanderson from 3 Days Grace, just a small-town Canadian band. He tells me how their new album has pushed them more into the spotlight.
The profile of the band has gone way up on this record.
We talk about his golf game, touring overseas, success out of Canada, even a little bit about how Neil fought his own mental health demons.
I don't shy away from telling my story anymore because I don't think because if it helps one person, then it's totally worth it.
Then we switch gears to legendary drummer Jeff Plate. Of course, he's touring this winter with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, as he's done for the last 20-plus years. We talk about life in mid-state New York, his drumming heroes, as well as the loss of Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Paul O'Neill.
And hey, he was my boss, he was my friend, he was, you know, the very reason that I'm here talking with you today, but...
Man, these guys go through a grueling tour schedule in late November, early December. His keys to success?
God, I don't know. I think I always show up on time. Show up prepared.
And more with drummer Jeff Plate and Neil Sanderson from 3 Days Grace today on Talking Rock.
This is Talking Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you, as always, for checking out the Talking Rock podcast. Another good one for you today with two great drummers, Neil Sanderson from 3 Days Grace and Jeff Plate. Most notably from Trans-Siberian Orchestra. He's also played with Sabotage, with Metal Church, and other bands as well. We'll get to him coming up here in just a few. Neil's going to be first, and then we'll get into our conversation with Jeff coming up here in a few minutes. But first, if you like this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, write a review, share with your friends. But more importantly, subscribe, man. I've got some killer stuff on deck coming up. And if you do like this interview, go back and check out some of the ones we've done previously with Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm, Corey Glover from Living Color. Just had Al Jorgensen on. That might be my favorite podcast interview so far since I started Talking Rock just a few weeks ago. So even if you don't know much about ministry, listening to Al Jorgensen is so entertaining. It was really a great conversation. So if you get a chance, go back and check those out. In the meantime, the guys from 3 Days Grace doing all sorts of stuff. They've got tours. If you're here in the Southeast Michigan area, they're going to be playing at Caesars Windsor coming up on November 29th. If you're out of the area, they're playing all through Canada. Then, of course, next year with Disturbed as well. Neil's on the line. Neil, thanks for calling in, man. How's things?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I guess you're traveling the planet, right? Did you guys just get back from Russia or something?
Yeah. We just had like a 6.5-week tour that started in England. And then took us down all through mainland Europe and up to Eastern Europe through the Baltics and then finished in Russia. Yeah, so just got home about not even a week ago. We were a little burnt out, but, we've got some downtime now and going to fire it back up in about a week.
Yeah, there you go. It's funny because, I leave Detroit and no one has any idea who I am. You guys travel around the entire world and fans come out and see you. Isn't that a little mind-blowing at times?
It is, man. It's been pretty crazy, especially this last record. Like the profile of the band has gone way up on this record. I think just this record really connected with people everywhere, and so, you know, going over there, we're selling out most of the shows and like bigger crowds than we've ever played, and you know, we consider this whole thing to be one crazy journey. So with a lot of twists and turns, and you don't quite know what's around the next corner, but that's part of the fun, and so we still love it, man.
Yeah, the other day I was at my house and I was just twiddling around playing some vinyl, you know, and I pulled out a Kim Mitchell record, and the thought came into my mind. It's like, here's a guy that never really broke in the United States or around the world. I mean, how important is it for a band from Canada like you guys to break outside of Canada?
That was always like a big priority for us, because we knew that like if we could break in the U.S., things have a tendency to propagate north. You know what I mean? But the other way around, sometimes it's hard to break through Canada if you've had kind of Canadian success first. And in the beginning, we signed directly to an American label, and then so then we signed to the Canadian affiliate of that label. So, and then we had American management as well. So that's kind of how we were able to start in the U.S. and then have things kind of go on a more global level from there.
Yeah, I think Barry was telling me about that one time. Not you mentioned that, because it is strange to think that some of these bands, I mean, I could list off tons of them off the top of my head, like from April Wine to Tragically Hip to whatever, that just were huge in Canada that never broke anywhere else.
Yeah. It's kind of something you got to work on. But now, like, social media can definitely help. Like, it's really breaks down the borders, and we'll like, talking about Russia, we'll go to like deep, like Eastern Siberia in Russia, and like where nobody speaks English, but they still know like every word to every single Three Days Grace song. You know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah. Growing up, it was always funny how the guys like for the Scorpions and stuff could play around the world, even though they, you know, their English was pretty brutal and stuff, you know, but they were a German band, yeah. You know?
It's crazy.
Where are you guys heading off next week then? Got this tour. You're going to touch down here in Caesars Windsor, I take, in November 29th. That's one of the gigs, right?
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah, it'll be pretty awesome. The only thing with casinos is, like, I like to gamble, so I'm basically volunteering my time because I'll lose all my money. we're flying to Moncton, New Brunswick, and that's where the tour starts. And then we pretty much go right across Canada and end up in BC at the end.
Yeah, it's always boggled my mind not being in the business you're in. I mean, I'm in the music business per se, but it's like if I were in a rock band, I'd want to tour Canada in the warm months.
Yeah, I know. It always seems that we're doing Canada in the cold months. You know what, though? It makes the show better because, you know, people start to get cabin fever and like, you know, we're not competing with LA bands who like would never tour Canada in the winter. And we're small town Canadian guys, so we can handle it. Like, a couple of us are going to bring our hockey equipment and put it underneath the bus just in case we can steal some ice time somewhere. And I don't know. I'm in for it.
I was going to say November 29th, man, I could get you guys hooked up with some hockey. You know, I've skated many times with Robbie from Godsmack when he's come through town. We've always gotten ice. I mean, at least 9 or 10 times.
Oh, nice, man. Yeah, I might have to take you up on that.
Yeah, and the theory guys and the whole thing. But, hey, you're a golfer too, right?
Yeah, I like to play golf. I don't know if I'm not going to be hitting the links on this tour, I guess. But, days off when the weather's nice and, like, get off the bus and, like, go have a couple beers on the golf course and breathe some fresh air and kind of stretch your legs and get out of the hotel. It definitely helps me balance and not go crazy on the road.
Yeah, I remember the guys from Hell Yeah did a Super Bowl thing for us, you know, in the beginning of February. We did it at this bar here in Detroit, and they had a golf simulator in the back, and those guys had a blast.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure, man. It's, I like to get out whenever I can. And then some of the other bands that we tour with, like Avenged Sevenfold, they're big into golf and stuff. And Wes Scanlon and I used to be golf buddies back in the day when we were touring with Puddle of Mud. So we'd crush some Coors Lights and go hit the course.
Yeah, Eric Bass from Shinedown's pretty good. And so is my friend Chris Fain from Slipknot. He was actually a scratch golfer at one point in his life.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not at that level. If I can keep it in double digits, I'm happy.
Yeah, you and me both. If I use less than 10 balls, it's a win for me, as far as I'm concerned. Talk about the breaking the Van Halen Billboard rock charts. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal, man. Like, we couldn't really believe it, you know, that we took out the record. I guess they held that record for 20 years or something. And at the end of the day, we owe it to the fans and to the industry. You know what I mean? Like, it's without the support of the industry and our fan base, nothing like that would be possible. And on our end, you know, I think what we can do is just stay true to ourselves and be honest in our songwriting. You know, every single Three Days Grace song is written from the heart, from our own experiences, from our psyche, from our insanity at times. But it's always reflecting a real experience or a real emotion coming from the band, you know. And I think Three Days Grace fans recognize that honesty. And, you know, we're regular people who go through regular stuff just like everybody else. So I think it becomes real to other people, too, because they can hear their own lives in our songs because it's real stuff. You know, we don't sit down and write a lot of contrived stuff. We don't write a lot of like party songs or anything like that. All of our songs kind of need to be felt, you know, and reflect something in our life that we're trying to make better.
And I'm always curious as to when you guys put out a record. Of course, you guys put out that record back in March and stuff, but was there a lot of overflow of other material that we might hear down the road?
There are a few. We really drill down into the songs, and so we don't write like 30 songs and just see what sticks. We consider that to kind of be a waste of time when we could use that time to like refine the songs that we really believe in. And then we kind of have a theory that it's like, if it's not good enough for this record, then it's not going to be good enough for the next record. But having said that, we kind of have this notion, like it's called like we call it the scrapyard, where like this song didn't work, but that riff, the guitar riff in the song was really cool. So we'll pull that riff out of that song and like use it somewhere else. Or like this lyric was cool, but it just didn't fit what we were trying to do at the time. So we'll pull it from the scrapyard and like use it in a different context. That happens a lot. But as far as like a finished product, we kind of like just, you know, we strip it back down and start from scratch.
And I got to imagine that when you're in there, and I've never written a song in my life, but I got to imagine that that there are certain songs you write and you're like, oh man, I cannot wait to play this in front of people. This is going to go over big time or something like that, huh?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like we knew like our second single, Infrared, was definitely like, even when we were recording that song, everyone in the studio was like, this song's special. And I knew like, just that type of guitar riff when it kicks in, like when we play that live, it's like the perfect jumping song. So the whole crowd just like starts jumping up and down when we kick into that riff. And I knew that was going to be the case from the get-go.
Yeah, that's cool. So like I said, on November 29th here at Caesars Windsor, just outside the Motor City across the river there. Hey, I wanted to touch on something you did a couple months ago, and I was talking to Brent Smith about this a couple weeks back, that he did this suicide prevention thing. He did this Friday Night Lights thing in Peterborough. Is that right?
Yeah. I got invited to be the guest speaker at a suicide awareness function put on by Dave Pogue, who's the president of the Peterborough Petes here. I don't shy away from telling my story anymore because if it helps one person, then it's totally worth it, you know. But I had some heavy stuff happen when I was a kid. Like I lost my brother and my dad in the same year when I was kind of not quite old enough to understand what that meant. And then I've had ongoing anxiety and stuff like a lot of people do. And as I got older and like, in, you know, now I realize that like my anxiety and stuff is directly attributable to like trauma that I experienced as a kid and stuff like that. And so, you know, sometimes it takes a lot of years to realize that like, yeah, maybe I do have a little PTSD from some crazy stuff that happened when I was young and that, you know. And so I just kind of realized that, and then I kind of had an enlightenment that like, that's okay. You know, it's like, that's my reality. That's my story. And so if I can tell it to some people and maybe help them find some clarity on what's going on in their head, then I should do that. You know, it's kind of my job. Like it's, I have an audience and I have a reach and I have a story and I can talk about it. So I think it's my duty to kind of do that, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Did you talk with your mom and stuff about it?
My mom passed away actually when I was 20. I've witnessed a loss pretty up close and realized as an adult that has affected me in a lot of ways, you know, as far as anxiety and just being uptight and stuff like that. And I'll tell people about it. You know, I'm not going to shy away from it anymore.
Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah, I lost my mom when I was 23, some 27 years ago. So yeah, I know what you're going through there. But yeah, that's a great story. I saw that online, and it's like, you know, obviously suicide and stuff has touched our industry, you know, big time, especially in the last couple of years.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I think, I'm not a doctor, so I can't speak on why the numbers are higher in the arts and music and stuff. But I do think, you know, there's a couple things that happen in music. I think that there's an extreme high that you get going on stage.
Right.
And you get used to that and you get addicted to that feeling of like all eyes on you. And, you know, there's pressure involved, but it's adrenaline and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes when you don't have that, it feels like a little bit of a void, just like withdrawal from drugs. You know what I mean? And I think that happens in acting and arts a lot, where people look for that rush in different places. And that's not necessarily good for your mental health if you start substituting it with substances or whatever, you know. And then I think, you know, it's amazing how much, you know, it's great that we have a huge amount of freedom and kind of, we can kind of, yeah, you can sleep in, you can do it, you know, you can, as long as you're there for the rock show, you can kind of, yeah, you got a dangerous amount of freedom and a dangerous amount of time. But sometimes, you know, idle hands are the devil's workshop. You know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes that dangerous amount of freedom, you end up going down a dark path. And I think that that's pretty common in the arts and music, you know. And the other thing is it's hard to compl- like you don't want, like a lot of people, you don't want to complain. It's like people don't want to, you know, the stigma is that people don't want to hear rock stars and successful actors complain, because what do we have to complain about? We're, you know, living a dream, you know. But the reality is that you have to talk about stuff, because what's going on inside your head doesn't really necessarily reflect what your quality of life is, and your lifestyle is just like, it's just your mental health, and you know, being open about it is super important, you know.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Yeah, Brad from Three Doors Down told me that he started drinking on tour just because he was bored. Like you're saying, the sure, idle yeah. hands, you know. So, but that's good stuff,
man. It's just like it's great to have like no routine and have the freedom to do whatever you want, but at the same time, you can, it can be a slippery slope, you know.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Well, listen, my time's coming to an end here. I appreciate all the time. We'll see you here outside the Motor City in a few weeks, and of course, be sure to check in on Barry's beard if you get a chance for us.
Yeah, I keep my distance from the beard.
hey, Neil, thanks so much for the time. Oh, we'll see you here next year on the Disturbed Tour. I almost forgot to mention that, man. You guys got it all set for the next year.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a wicked tour, man. I'm super stoked.
So, all right, Neil, thanks for the time, man. Safe travels.
All right, brother. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
One down, one to go. Neil Sanderson from 3 Days Grace, killer stuff from him. And now Jeff Plate from Trans-Siberian Orchestra had a chance to talk with Joel Hoekstra, great guitar player. If you've never seen TSO before live in concert, man, you don't know what you're missing. These guys, they kind of set the bar for live shows. It's amazing what they do on stage. And, you know, I had a chance to interview Paul O'Neill a few times, who kind of put this whole thing together. And, I mean, I got to tell you something. That guy, it was bigger, badder, more explosive, more lights, more sound. I mean, it just couldn't get big enough for that guy. And, of course, we lost him a year and a half ago, back in April of 2017. And, man, what a loss that was. But they continue on with his legacy, rolling through towns all throughout the Christmas holiday. It's one of the highest grossing tours out there every single year, and they play the least amount of time, I think, like for a month or something like that. But really good stuff here from Jeff Plate. Hope you guys dig this. Hey, by the way, no Rock News Day with Al Beck. He's being lazy. No, actually, he had to go somewhere today. And plus, we got two interviews, so we'll get to Rock News coming up with a special guest coming up, hopefully before the end of the week. In the meantime, it's time for Jeff Plate from TSO here on Talkin' Rock. Hey, Jeff, is that you?
This is me.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good.
This is Meltdown from WRAF. Had the pleasure to meet you last year at the show here at Little Caesars Arena.
And a nice arena it is. It's a beauty.
I was going to ask you about that. I saw the show, obviously, and man, I'll tell you what, that arena, it's kind of funny. It's got all the bells and whistles. I even saw Foo Fighters the other night, and during one of their songs, they got like the balcony actually kind of lights up in stars and different things, you know, and you guys could use all the ceiling, you know, the ceiling panels and all sorts of stuff, huh?
I think that we did last year. I can't remember exactly, but a lot of the times the lighting console and the lighting director will actually sync right into some of that stuff. So you've got video flames surrounding the entire arena and the roof and the walkways. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The other night even they used some of the, you know how sometimes they have like the words and the advertisements going around like the bowl of the arena. They actually tapped into that too, and they did some different things with that. So yeah, it's a cool arena, man. There's a lot of stuff that functions in there. But hey, thanks for the time. Of course, TSO coming back through the Motor City yet again this year, and I'll tell you what, two big shows. But hey, real fast, I just want to get into this for a second. I grew up in Western New York, and I see you grew up in the Finger Lakes, huh?
Yeah, I'm from Horseheads, Elmira. I live, just about 10 miles, about 12 miles south of Seneca Lake.
Okay, yeah, Seneca Lake, Watkins Glen stuff. Man, I can't tell you the amount of times I've been there. That's one of the most beautiful places in New York.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I grew up here. I was born and raised here, and I've been all over the world, and there's really nothing prettier. especially this time of year.
Yeah, there's something about mid-state New York for sure, between the Finger Lakes with the hills and the change of the seasons and the whole thing, man. I couldn't agree more.
Yep.
So, and I just thought, as a matter of fact, I just jotted down on my notes real fast. I just talked to Carl Palmer the other day. Are you like a progressive Carl Palmer fan?
Yeah. I mean, ELP, all that stuff. You know, when I was a kid, my older friends turned me on to this music, and I was like, oh, my God. But I've had the pleasure of meeting Carl. We actually did a couple songs with Greg Lake. He sat in with TSO a number of years ago, but it was a real thrill to do that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I did a thing on my social media last week about your Mount Rushmore of guitar players and bass players, and of course we got around to drummers and stuff, and almost every list had Neil Peart in it. Would he be in your list, you think?
Yes, he would. When I was very young, obviously Buddy Rich was the most famous drummer. You know, you saw him on television quite a bit. And my first drumming hero was Danny Serafin from the band Chicago.
Okay, yeah.
And then it wasn't soon after that that I saw Kiss on television, and that completely blew my mind. So then it was all about Peter Criss for a couple of years. But when Rush came out with 2112, that was the game changer. And all of a sudden, you know, a lot of the other music was just collecting dust, and it was all about listening to Rush and learning all those Neil Peart riffs. So, yeah, he's right up there on the top.
Now, have you ever had a chance to meet him?
No, I have not.
Yeah, he's a little bit, he's a little bit, like, I'm not going to say reclusive, but he doesn't meet a lot of people.
No, he seems, whether it's shy or whatever, that's just who he is. And, you know, and sometimes everybody's personality is different, and that seems to be how Neil rolled. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson, they were always more than willing to go in front of the camera and talk to people and do that kind of thing. But Neil was the guy that just kind of, you know, shuffled off into the distance, off into the sunset, and he did all his talking on the stage with his drums.
Yeah. Who are your other drum heroes? I know you just mentioned a couple of them. Are you mostly like, I don't know, a metal / progressive guy, or do you like other kinds of stuff too?
You know, when I was a kid, it was Peter Criss and Neil Peart, obviously,
yeah.
and then Alex Van Halen came along, but I was also turned on to, Phil Lehart from Kansas, Steve Smith from Germany, Terry Bozzio. There was a number of those cats, Philip Bailey, who played with Jeff Beck. There was a number of these guys that really, the jazz fusion stuff really got a hold of me for a while, and that was where I really started buckling down and really focused on learning to be a drummer and being more musical. But, you know, over the years, I've seen so many drummers and met some people and listened to some players that are just, you know, out of this world fantastic. There really is so many people out there trying to really put a finger on it. But I'll tell you, probably my favorite drummer today, you know, current drummer that's playing, is Todd Zukerman, and he's the drummer in Styx. And Todd is just the culmination of everything. He's got all the chops. He is very powerful, very tasty, very musical. But he comes from a school of jazz and progression, and he knows how to tastefully apply that to the Styx music. And I've just been a huge fan of him ever since I saw him.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring it up. I know that the record, the Mission there they had out last year in 2017 was really good.
Yes, very good. I mean, and if you didn't know any better, that sounded like Styx from 1978.
Right.
It sounded like an older record. And I think that they consciously, you know, tried to do that. And, hey, you know, it's kind of nice to see a band, you know, not be pretentious. You know, let's do what we do. Let's be who we are. And they released a record that I think really, you know, it could be any one of those records in succession that they were releasing back in the day.
Yeah, one final thing on drummers here, because I know we could talk about drummers all day long, but I don't know, I can't remember if I told you about this last year or not, but I saw Korn last year in 2017 at Rock on the Range, and I could not stop watching Ray Lazier. I can't remember the last time I was like just mesmerized by a drummer like that. Have you seen Ray play?
Not in person, but Korn recently had a special on television on the Audience Network, I believe. But anyhow, Ray is such a powerful, intense drummer. And when he is so focused on every note that he plays It's like he almost looks like he's in pain. But when you hear it, it is so smooth and so precise and so tasteful. It's like, you know, he just nails it every time. So, you know, here again, like I mentioned, there are so many drummers like Ray Legere, who probably a lot of people don't really know of. But when you see them play, you go, oh, my God, this guy is fantastic. So there's just a slew of great players out there.
Yeah. Now, of course, you're a great player playing with TSO. And I was surprised to hear about this, but your first studio record that you ever recorded was the Sarajevo record?
Yes, the Sabotage record, Dead When You're Dead, 1995. And this was the my first studio record with the band. This was a concept record about the war that was going on in Bosnia at the time. And, you know, Paul O'Neill, who is he's very well read on history and war and European culture and all that, he was very concerned and interested in this. So that record was a concept record based around that theme.
Now, I just mentioned Paul O'Neill. I talked to Joel Holster about this a few weeks back, but what was it like last year without Paul around for the first time you guys did this on tour?
Well, it was very strange, to say the least. I joined the band Sabotage in 1994, and that's when I first met Paul. And then, you know, as you mentioned, Dead When You're Dead was released. Christmas Eve Sarajevo was on that record, and that song became the catalyst for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So I've been working with Paul, you know, ever since 1994, and hey, he was my boss, he was my friend, he was, you know, the very reason that I'm here talking with you today. But last year when I got the phone call, it was, you know, obviously he took the feet right out from under me. And I, first and foremost, you know, his wife and his daughter, you're very concerned about them and supporting them any way we can. But, you know, thinking about everything that man did to make this happen, to make TSO a success, if people only knew, you had to see Paul in action to understand how insanely dedicated he was to this project. And to have him not with us last year, especially during the rehearsals, which is where Paul really used to shine. You know, he was the guy in the middle of the floor, you know, directing every lighting cue and that lighting focus and lighting color and who stands where and who does what. And, you know, he was just so into it. And when he wasn't there for that, that's really where I miss Paul. And obviously once we get on the road and you start doing the show, and it's a show, it's our job and all this and that, but, you know, this is our life. And Paul dedicated his life to this project, and being able to go out and do this tour and tribute of him to help carry on his legacy it's really an honor. But I tell you what, his family, his wife and his daughter, you know, they're never going to get over the pain. But once they realize how important TSO was to not only Paul, but all of us that work for Paul and all the fans, you know, they decided, well, let's get this thing going. Let's just try to carry on what Paul started. And, you know, here we are, year two without Paul, but things look very good for TSO. The future looks very good for us.
Yeah, it's great that you say, you know, it's like you say that, you know, that obviously the family's, you know, it was painful and whatnot, but the legacy he left, that's hard to top.
It's his life work. And, you know, his wife and his daughter were there from the beginning, just like, you know, myself and Chris Caffrey and Al Patelli and Johnny Middleton. We were here from the very first TSO note until now. And boy, you know, it's not just that I would hate ever for this thing to happen for personal reasons, but just the big picture is what he created really is phenomenal. So, out of respect for Paul, I wouldn't have nearly what I have now if it wasn't for him. You know, we go out there every year with a little more intensity and a little more purpose. And I think, you know, like I said, the future looks very good for us. Last year was our most successful tour to date. This year seems to be right on the same path, if not going to exceed that. So I think we're in good hands with his family, and the fan base is growing every year. So things look good for us.
Now, some of the reason that this show is so successful and just rakes in all sorts of money, and of course donates a lot of money to charity as well. People don't realize that, but you guys have donated more than $15 million to charity over the last 20 years. But you guys, in many cities, maybe in all of them, I'm not sure how this works. You guys play two shows in each city?
Not in each city. Okay. For the most part, we do 8 shows in 5 days. Two in the show days are singles, and the other 3 are doubles. So obviously when the market allows, you know, we play the double show days, you know, it is quite a grind. It is a grueling schedule, but, you know, it's well worth it. And what an interesting problem to have. You know, you have such a fan base that you have to play two arenas twice in a day. And I can remember, you know, when we started doing double shows in theaters, thinking, wow, this is something else. And then, I mean, it was small arenas. The next thing you know, here we are playing Detroit, selling out the arena twice in one day. Same with Cleveland and Pittsburgh and all these other major cities. It's just really remarkable what's happened. But to think that the fan base has grown every year and, you know, our core fans have stuck with us and really spread the word for us.
Now, I was going to ask you, like, when you go into a city like a Detroit or something, is there something that you do differently as far as those dates with two shows, or is it pretty much the same thing, or do you eat differently? Do you rest periodically? How does it work?
Well, pretty much rest as much as possible. I mean, in my case, I have a lot of work to do on stage.
Right.
So. Usually at the end of the night, it's pretty much behave yourself and go to bed and get some rest and get a massage if you can. So the double show days are, you know, they're long days, they're busy days. The TSO show is roughly 2.5 hours long. And, you know, thankfully throughout the show there are breaks. There is the story segment of our show, which is the beginning half of the show. We have a narrator who narrates the story along with the songs that we play. There's a couple acoustic songs. There's a couple slower songs. So there's a number of breaks throughout the show that let me catch my breath and, you know, get a drink and just kind of chill for a minute or two. But nonetheless, they are long days. And, you know, it's here again. When you're playing in an arena full of people, whether it's a matinee or a night show or whether it's the eighth show out of eight, you know, in that 5-day period, it's all fantastic.
Now, I know we're running out of time here, so I just want to touch on some other things you might be doing. After TSO this year, what do you got planned for 2019? What are you working on?
Well, January is pretty much rest and recovery. And right now, I mean, here again, with TSO, losing Paul last year really kind of, you know, obviously it shook things up. And right now his wife and his daughter are at the helm of this, and we've got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, Paul always had a number of different projects he was working on. So I think now that things have maybe settled down a little bit, we're going to get back into doing that. Hopefully we'll maybe get something recorded next year. Mm. But in the meantime, while I'm home, you know, I teach drums. I play locally once in a while, and I really just try to keep myself in shape, so I'm at the ready for the next tour.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, real fast, final thing here for you. What is? I've been asking people about this all year. What has been the keys to your success?
Myself personally or TSO?
Yeah, yourself.
God, I don't know. I think I always show up on time, show up prepared. You know, be willing to go the extra mile if you have to. You know, my good friend Al Pacelli, he always, his quote is, preparation meets opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of years, when I was younger, a lot of hours every day practicing my drums and taking lessons and trying to just improve. And when in 1994, when I got the call for Sabotage, I was ready. So luckily, I got it with this group of guys, and we all hit it off really well. And here again, maintaining that over the years. I've been working for this organization now for, God, 24, 25 years. So it's not so much reinventing the wheel, but you have to really focus on yourself and just stay prepared, try to stay sharp, and, you know, be a good person. Be a good person. There's a lot of talented people out there, but if you're not fun to be around, nobody's going to hire you. So I try to keep all that in mind.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, you are a good dude. I remember, you know, like I said, meeting with you last year. It was nice to talk to you and see some of the guys backstage with Steve Black before the show. And the show was fantastic, as it always is. I mean, it's really, somebody was just asking me about it this weekend. And I'm like, it's kind of the show that you base all the other shows around, because there's so much sizzle and so much going on. It's almost too hard to explain.
It really is. And I mean, yes, I'm a member of the band. I try to encourage everybody to come out and see the show. But at the same time, I know that it's one of the most unique shows you're ever going to see. And for some people, it's the best show they're ever going to see. So if people have never heard TSO or knowingly heard TSO, when you come to our show, chances are you will recognize some of our songs. You will definitely recognize some of the holiday themes that we have in our music. You'll recognize some of the classical music themes we have in our music. So there's a lot that connects everybody to what we're doing. And then throw on top of that just the, you know, people like Joel and Chris Caffrey and the talent I have on stage to work with, along with the lighting and production. It's really second to none. So I encourage people to come out and try it at least once, and I guarantee they won't be disappointed.
Well, enjoy your time in Mid-State New York there, and of course, have fun on tour. We'll see you here in December at the Little Caesars Arena, and of course, all around. You're on the East Coast tour, and we'll see you here, and of course, maybe in 2019 on tour, eh?
Awesome. Sounds good, man.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the time.
Take care.
This much is true. That guy works hard on stage. There's no doubt about that. Sometimes doing two shows for a drummer. Man, I can't even imagine. But a really good drummer. Great band. I mean, like I said before the interview, that show they put on is just spectacular if you've ever had a chance to see it. So hope you guys dug this edition of Talking Rock. Once again, subscribe. Give it a 5-star rating. If you could, write a review. Share it with your friends. And keep checking back because, like I said, we got some really cool stuff on deck as we're going to be expanding the Talking Rock podcast. And hopefully next time, Al Beck will be here with some rock news as well. In the meantime, thank you for listening.